Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Diving into the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Bob, can you tell my last four lovers that 4 seconds is actually okay time-wise?
Yeah, shoot their numbers over here. We'll call them.
Yeah, and then somebody says, Dusty, I actually have the Vanna White Playboy. If you want it, the pages are clean. I don't trust it.
Do you save that? Because I still have the first one that I ever had. My mother dropped off a bunch of Playboys years ago from the 70s at my house.
Nice.
I don't know if my wife threw them away or I threw them. Somebody may have gotten rid of them because I'm starting to look through it. Like every other ad's an ad for Newport cigarettes and stuff that doesn't even exist anymore. And I'm like, I thought I wanted these. I thought maybe they'd be worth something. My mother does estate sales, you know, now because she's retired and she buys stuff if she sees. So she'll call me every once in a while. Hey, they've got a George Brett this or a Don Mattingly that you want. I'm like, yeah, grab that. She goes, hey, they got Playboys from the 70s. Do you want? Yeah.
Don't forget, Divisional Round coverage is brought to you by Bud Light, the official beer partner of your Kansas City Chiefs. Divisional Round, a lot of similarities when it comes to the Houston Texans side from where they were in 2019, but they're back in the exact same spot, right? Houston then had their quarterback of the future, a head coach who they think is the guy with a defense that can disrupt a quarterback, right? That's kind of like Houston had a decent defense in 2019. They had a good defensive line. They had their quarterback in Deshaun Watson, who they thought was going to be the next future, right? It was his second full year in 2019.
Yeah.
This is C.J. Stroud's second full year as a starter, right? In that year, Deshaun won 10 games. You know how many games C.J. Stroud won this year?
11 if you count the playoffs.
Sure. But 10 games in the regular season. Again, both have their second full year. They both have their wide receiver one, Nico Collins this year. DeAndre Hopkins was then in 2019. And in those 2 years, C.J. Stroud threw 20 touchdowns this year and 12 interceptions.
It's pretty good.
In 2019, Deshaun Watson threw 26 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. Hmm. This year, C.J. Stroud threw for 37-27. And that year, Deshaun Watson threw for 38-52.
So the moral of the story is somebody tell C.J. Stroud he doesn't need a massage.
Yes, if you want to go that route.
Right.
So the Houston Texans essentially are set up to do the same thing they were set up to do in that 2019 year where they were in the divisional round, right? They beat Buffalo in that first round, came to Kansas City with a lot of high aspirations. Like, hey, we just beat one of the up-and-coming teams, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, supposedly at the time was going to be the next, which he is, right?
And that's right. They beat Josh Allen that year down in Houston. Yeah. I'm visioning that game again in my mind. Yeah, that's right.
And they just beat Herbert and the Chargers. Yeah. And now they're coming to Kansas City with a little bit of hope and a little bit of, okay, this is the team. This is the franchise that we have to eventually get over in the AFC. Can they come to Arrowhead and do it? In 2019, 24-0, ended 51-27.
Right.
Or whatever it was.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you that because I don't think they scored again after the 24, right? Didn't they like blank them 51-0 or something, like go on some stupid run
right
like that? But I think the real big picture, like the 360-degree view of this whole thing, is that this is why I tell people all the time to enjoy what we have going on right now, because what you just laid out is about as good an analogy as anybody could lay out there for why you need as a Chiefs fan to be enjoying this moment, because the Texans were here at the top. They crashed and went back to the bottom, and look how hard they've had to work to get back to the top. Since Bill O'Brien was fired, David Culley's been the coach down there. Lovie Smith's been the coach down there. They've had three coaches since that guy's been fired, multiple quarterbacks throughout that time. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have just continued to matriculate on, and people still are finding ways to not enjoy what's going on here in Kansas City. That's why I think what you just laid out there is pretty much brilliant, because if you don't have a perspective now of what we're doing and how awesome this is and why it's important to enjoy every moment of this, I don't know what else to tell you, because that Houston story right there, that is real and spectacular, you know?
It's a lot of similarities, and the timeline to me is still the same. The Texans team is set for the future, but it's not now versus the Chiefs.
Right.
I think that C.J. Stroud is going to be one of those quarterbacks in the future, because I don't think he's going to get lost in the fame and the sickness that was Deshaun Watson, but I think that he is set up that franchise, and that franchise is set up to be successful.
And I think they have a better coach now, Dusty, than Bill O'Brien. And,
I would think so.
And you know, and I don't know if that's a knock on Bill O'Brien, or that's just my love for DeMeco Ryans. Because as everybody knows, I've been a DeMeco fan since day one that they hired him down there. And I even told my friends who were Texan fans, they're going to be good right away. Okay, fine. They're good because you got a leader in there. I don't know that Bill O'Brien was that leader. I think DeMeco Ryans is that leader, but also that credible leader that players buy into, because he's just removed from playing the game. They know that he's been through everything that they're going through right now. And again, he is a leader that will get people motivated. And I don't know that Bill O'Brien was necessarily that guy.
I think Bill O'Brien was more of like a head coach, whereas I think DeMeco Ryans is like a head coach, players coach.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
Seeing how DeMeco Ryans was reacting to that game, where he was like on the field, pounding the ground, like in pure excitement, like having Will Anderson.
Did DeMeco Ryans play in this game in 2019? Or was he with San Francisco as their defensive assistant in 2019?
Honestly, I can't answer that question. I know Justin Reed and DeAndre Hopkins were on that field against the Chiefs, and Justin Reed had a big, the fumble on the punt or the, whatever it was from Dan Sorensen.
By that time, he was a linebackers coach with San Fran.
He was, So, but he's not far removed from playing, you know, for the Houston Texans. And while I don't think you need to be a former NFL player to be a good coach in this league, obviously, DeMeco Ryans does have that kind of credibility that, like, I think a lot of guys are looking for right now. And so if DeMeco's telling you to do something, you're probably going to listen a little bit more, because he was a successful player in the NFL. He did wear the C for the Houston Texans. I mean, we're not talking about a scrub player. We're talking about a legit football player for the Houston Texans, who's a legit head coach right now. I love the guy, man.
Played 9 years in the league, played 5 years with Houston, 2006 to 2011.
So the majority of his career was with the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
But the reason why the timeline is still the same is because they have their quarterback, they have their coach of the future, at least what we think at the time, and they're set up for success. The only problem is they're going to be fine. Houston's going to be fine. They play in a weak division. They should be the top dogs at division until the other teams can figure it out. Jacksonville, Tennessee.
Who even scares you in that division right now?
Nobody, honestly.
Right.
I mean,
Houston's got that thing on lockdown, don't they?
Right. Jacksonville, they got a whole lot of questions. They don't have a coach. They have a quarterback. They don't know if they can get back to like the reality that he is a quarterback of the future of a franchise. And, you know, you look at Indianapolis, I mean, maybe they can figure something out, but they're still kind of lost.
They lost to the Giants.
It is what it is. And Drew Locke, my guy. But it was Flacco. And the other thing, too, is that the thing that's still the same is that the Houston Texans are respectful. They're credible. They're a team that can be good. But they're still behind the Chiefs, because the Chiefs are still that team. And I know that was the year number one where the Chiefs went on that great run, came back from behind against the Texans, came back behind the Tennessee Titans, and came from behind against the Niners and won the Super Bowl. But the thing that still remains the same is the Chiefs are the cream of the crop. And if Houston wants to do it, they've got to show that they can. And they tried for about a quarter, and then the Chiefs took over. So again, you're still facing Mahomes. You're still facing Andy Reid. You're still coming to Arrowhead. Yes, your team is set up for the future. Yes, you have your franchise quarterback and your wide receiver one. But can you and do you have enough to continue to be that threat in the AFC? We'll find out Saturday at 3:30.
And this team that they're going to face on Saturday, Houston, is a lot better than what they saw 3 weeks ago in Kansas City. On that, you know, that Saturday before Christmas. Patrick Mahomes is healthy. DeAndre Hopkins is going to play a lot more. You're going to have the dual-headed running back system ready to rock and roll. Travis Kelce is healthy right now.
And Hollywood Brown
is back now and ready to go. And that's a big difference in this game. And, oh, Charles Omenihu is back to full strength now. Everybody's playing much better on the defensive side of the football.
Like Joe Tooney at left tackle.
Joe Tooney at left tackle now has more experience out there. So you're talking about a Chiefs team that is better than they were less than a month ago when they played against the Houston Texans.
And that game where Tank Dell and Nico are doing their thing. now you have another corner that's back that wasn't back.
That's exactly right. And no Tank Dell, right? And that's a big deal as
well. Yeah.
I mean, I think Joe Mixon is going to be a big key to this game for Houston, as I was kind of thinking about it a little bit yesterday. Like, all right, you stop the run, you shut down Joe Mixon, you're going to give yourself a great and I know that's like elementary, nonsensical football stuff. I think Joe Mixon's a really good running back that doesn't get enough credit, man. Like, I know he's got a bad history of off-the-field stuff that he did, but as a football player, this guy's really, really good right now, and he's been a good leader down there in Houston for these guys.
Yep. They're going to take Nico, Dalton Schultz, and Joe Mixon and try to do the Chiefs formula from last year and try to let that three kind of take over. But again, the Chiefs do very well at stopping the run.
They do.
And Mixon, the one guy who knows what Kansas City's capable of. He's experienced
this. Yeah, right, because of the Bengals situation, obviously. But this is a much better team. This may be the best team that Patrick Mahomes has had from 1 to 53 going into the playoffs that maybe he's ever had before.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, Dana Hughes, the color commentator for the Chiefs Radio Network, joins the show. Plus, we get down to the Final Four and who's better. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home, Kansas City Sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at TheFan965 for behind-the-scenes content from the show. Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Don't forget, Dana Hughes, he'll join us here in about 5 minutes to talk a little Houston, Kansas City. I know he remembers that game a few short years ago.
And he remembers the one when he played against Houston and they threw the football at Buddy Ryan's face. A lot of history with Houston.
Was that J.J. Burton?
No, was that Keith Cash. Yeah.
Buddy Ryan's face.
That's right.
Warren Moon. One of the greatest jerseys of all time, the old Houston Oilers.
Oh, God, yes. I mean,
just that touch of red.
Why? Here's what I was thinking.
They had red then.
Like the end of the year, the Texans played the Titans, and the Titans wore the old Houston Oilers.
Awesome.
It was fantastic, right? Why doesn't the NFL or every other sports league, for that matter, do what they did with Cleveland? When the Browns left and went to Baltimore, they froze the franchise, kept the colors, the records, all that kind of stuff in Cleveland. And they just moved and they became a new franchise. They became the Ravens and started from scratch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they do that with more teams, especially ones that are the iconic brands like the Houston Oilers were? They should have froze that franchise and allowed them. Like, you can move your team, but you're not taking the markings with you. You're not taking the uniform. You can move your team, but you have to start anew. You have to start fresh. And I think that, you know, should be kind of the thing going forward. If you're going to relocate, you have to rebrand yourself. And honestly, if you're living in Tennessee, do you want somebody else's scrap, or do you want your own new team to be a part of?
They want the scrap. They're so passionate about it. Oh, my gosh. They get so mad. That's ours. That's our franchise.
Okay, well, you got nothing else down there.
Exactly.
Except, you know, country music and bachelorette parties, which is great. But, you know, but like for where I sit, like the Jazz in Utah, when was the last time you saw a jazz concert break out in Utah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, seriously, so why not keep these teams and keep their assets frozen? If a new team comes in, they become that team, but you don't get to take that with you on the road because it looked ridiculous and you've shut out one of the best uniforms in the sport.
When's the last time the royal family came to Kansas City?
I know. It's been a long time.
You asked a question yesterday about the TGL from the 620. They said, good morning from Pratt, Kansas, guys. I don't know about you, Dusty, but I'm ready to see Tiger Woods on TGL tonight.
He's playing tonight. Yeah.
So that's Tuesday, we got a couple days to kind of get through the week, so we'll see how that is entertaining. We'll see if he gets through the entire round without getting hurt. But I am interested to see how Tiger swings it in a simulated golf round.
Do you tend to swing harder when you play in those simulators or play at Top Golf than maybe you do if you're out on the course? Because if you're out on the course, obviously, it matters more than you're in like a simulator or something like that where you're just trying to drive the hell out of it, right?
I don't know if you swing harder. You just kind of have, like, it's tough. Like, you don't have, I mean, depending on the simulator with, like, wind and all that, which they can all do that in there. Normally,
the simulators have wind?
I think either do.
Do they really?
I think so.
Like actual wind that blows, like,
not in you, but, like, on the screen. Oh, like, you could be like, hey, you have, like, a 10-mile-an-hour wind from the southeast. Like, you have to judge your shot based on where it has it in the simulator. But
gotcha.
The thing that's cool about theirs is, like, their greens move. Like, they mold to what that hole is. So if you're playing Pebble Beach on the TGL, they'll fix the green, like, animatronically or whatever it is, to like the way that green is.
That's awesome.
Somebody says, when's the last time a Raptor was in Toronto?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. But the Raptors were new to Toronto, right?
They
like,
also
like,
had their OG uniforms were sick too.
When was the last time you saw a grizzly wandering the streets of Memphis? Right. Like, I mean, you're from Tennessee. Did you ever see a grizzly if you ever went over to Memphis? I know I know Memphis to Nashville is further than Nashville to Canada, but did you ever see a grizzly?
Can't
down
say that
there?
I did. No. Okay.
Walking on Beale Street.
Yeah. Right. Like looking for Elvis. Yeah, course, like if you saw a grizzly on Beale Street. With sunglasses looking for Elvis, would you talk to the grizzly bear? I would.
I would say, what's up?
I would
up?
Have a conversation with Absolutely. The bear. Yeah.
Would you rather have a beer with Elvis or Johnny Cash?
I would say Johnny Cash.
Me too. Me too.
I'd be like, tell me about that story in Reno.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like,
did you really kill that guy and watch him die?
Right, exactly. Like, what was it like to grow up named Sue? What was it like to be at Folsom Prison? Like,
what is the Ring of Fire really about?
That's right. Yeah. I don't mind Elvis. Jen hates Elvis. So we always play it at tailgates and whatnot because Ralph's the big Elvis guy. So he likes it.
It is one of those things. I've also noticed you have a lot of hatred towards the Eagles.
I don't like the Eagles.
You just not your thing?
I don't know. I just
saw
never.
You say it was like most overrated band in your opinion, like the Eagles. And I was like, what's wrong with the Eagles?
I don't know. It's just one of those things where I'm not.
Because I'm that way towards the Beatles, which I think would be the same reaction that like you would have.
No, I used to be that way towards the Beatles. God honest truth. Yeah. Like I hate the Beatles. It was for me the most overrated band of all time. And that's because then you start to think back when you're driving in the car with your dad, you're listening to your parents' music. And so that I want to listen to my music, you know, all that kind of nonsense that the kids are doing with me now. So it was always the Beatles. So you just get tired of that, just like eating pizza every night. You eventually get tired of that. Mm-hmm. But then I cut the Beatles out of my life for a good period of time and recently have started to listen to songs here and there. And I've appreciated them even more. The Eagles for me, I don't know. I'm just not a fan.
Yeah. No Jaguars in Jacksonville either, I reckon.
That's exactly right. Any Panthers in Carolina? But I'm talking about like franchises that have moved, right? Like that have moved and then stayed, you know, the same, like Oakland. There's no Athletics in there.
Right. It's Tuesday, 7:25. Dating Hughes time. Spitfire, hot fire.
You hear them on game days in the booth.
Quickly, they get chunky and funky with stretching the field vertically.
And Thursday nights at 6 during Players Only.
Spitfire, hot fire take.
Here's Chiefs Radio Network color analyst, Dinan Hughes, on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
That's right. Danny Hughes brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue.
It may also be a deterrent, too, to move your franchise. Like if you're the Raiders and then you move every other year, right? Well, you got to leave the Raider name in Oakland. Mm. Would you move to Las Vegas and rebrand or would you stay in Oakland as the Raiders?
Vegas and rebrand.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Get me out of Oakland.
All right. Danan, what would you do? Stay in Oakland as the Raiders or move to Vegas and rebrand as like the Unicorns?
Definitely rebrand and move. I think that was a great move for the Raiders from a fan's perspective. I don't know from an organization perspective because, you know, they play 17 away games.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the nature of it. So, yeah, from them, I think it's a great venue. The only credit I can give the Raiders is that it's a great venue. I think the Super Bowl should be there every other year.
Oh wow! Every other year, okay. Yeah. I don't
disagree with that.
Yeah,
I think you go to Arizona, you go to Florida's, and you go to Vegas.
You don't do New Orleans.
No.
Why? Because I think New Orleans, honestly, Dana and I know we're going there this year, but that has nothing to do. I think they do an unbelievable job at hosting events. Everything's compact. It's not too big. You can walk everywhere. I'm not a guy that wants to sit in L.A. traffic for 17 hours, even though I grew up in Jersey. I'm done with that. Like, I can walk everywhere in New Orleans.
Yeah, I think I like that aspect. I think the first thing that came to my mind when you talk about New Orleans is the stadium. So. Yeah. The stadium is outdated.
Dump.
It's kind of old. Yeah. So when I think about the Super Bowl in totality, yeah, the nightlife and the condensed nature of it, it would be great down there. I'm sure it will be. I'm excited about going down there if we can get there, and I believe we can. But, you know, the weather in Florida, the weather in Arizona is going to be consistent. And then Vegas, I mean, everything that you needed – that you wanted to partake of, concerts. I mean, it's the normal life there. So it wasn't like it was bigger then, like when you go to some of these other cities. So I thought it was a great time, and I love Arizona as well.
So, Dana, we have a game on Saturday at 3:30 against a Houston Texans team that we've seen already this year, actually not that long ago in Week 16. Kind of the same sort of game, or do you see it being a little bit different from both sides of the sidelines from Houston and Kansas City?
I think there may be some similarities, but obviously you can learn a lot, not just in 1 week, but in a few weeks. Just like you said, we played them in Week 16. We kind of nullified their defense just a bit, and it seems like they're playing a little bit better. We got to be prepared for the pass rush just because we had success with Joe Tooney out at the tackle position. And Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. didn't really make as much noise, definitely didn't make as much noise as they made this weekend. We still got to be prepared for that. And they'll watch the film. That's one of the games that I think that they would probably say they underachieved on the defensive side, and they take a lot of pride in their defense. So I would not be shocked to see them come out and be very aggressive early, trying to get in our face and push us on our heels just a bit from a defensive perspective. So I think there's going to be some differences, and C.J. Stroud is going to try to get the ball out of his hands quickly, take positive yards, even if it's 2 or 3 yards at a clip, take his shots periodically as well. But I think they're going to try. They're not going to come in here and try not to lose. They're going to come in here and try to win from the beginning.
What do you expect from our tackles this week, Dan? We've had a couple of weeks now with Joe Tooney at the left side, and guys got the opportunity to kind of heal up. That seems to be the one position I think a lot of people are going, how's that going to hold up?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two different schools of thought. Do you just stay with Joe Tooney out at the tackle and go down with him playing every snap until there are no snaps left? Or do you go with DJ Humphreys knowing that you can go to the bullpen, bring in Mike Caliendo, and move Joe Tooney out there? If you're asking me my opinion, I'm saying the latter. I feel like you have that in your bag. You have that as an option. So, yeah, you don't want to get down by 21 and make the decision to change, but I feel like you can allow the game to move at a pace that you're still controlling it as an offense. You're still feeling comfortable as an offense. And if needed, you can go to that. And I think that's a huge asset that not a lot of teams have. They don't have the versatility of a number two guy who's also an all-pro that can move out and be very, very serviceable, even more than serviceable, at the left tackle position of all positions. So I don't know if you start the game that way, but I definitely think you keep it in your back pocket in case you have to break glass in case of emergency. So that's a good asset to have. Everybody will be healthy relatively, and we'll see how things – there's some decisions to be made. I mean, if you got a healthy Mecole Hardman, we've seen what Nico Remigio can do at the punt return and kick return position. You know what you got. Everybody kind of fills their roles for this game, and it's exactly what you want going into the playoffs. You don't want to be the greatest in September, October, and November, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a team, especially during that gauntlet of 3 games in 11 days, that was playing more complete football than the Chiefs.
When you watch that game in Week 16, and I know you played and you've probably seen a lot of guys get injured throughout the game, some more brutal than not. How much of that injury to Tank Dell kind of took the air out of that team the last time they played this game? Because Tank was cooking, man, and so was CJ. And then that happened, and it was, you know, a catastrophic injury, and you saw the emotions on CJ Stroud's face. How much of that in that game in that moment kind of took some juice out of the Houston Texans in that game?
Yeah, you'd like, as a football fan, you'd like to think that these guys are just all gladiators. They are going to run through a brick wall and you know, their bodies will take the pounding and the punishment, and that's what they live for. But there are some emotions that go into it. And when you watch C.J. Stroud break down, like, that's your leader, and I'm not blaming him specifically for that loss or how they were deflated. But it takes a toll. And I've been on the field where I've seen guys, you know, lose consciousness, you know, lose feeling. Heck, I was a guy that lost feeling in my whole body after a hit. And thankfully, I was able to wake up and get my bearings. And stupidly, I went back into the game later in that game. That's a whole different story. But it does take a toll, man. And I've been on that field, and I've seen teammates get hurt and devastatingly injured. And you know, you can't find yourself for a little bit. That's the key, is that you wind up, you know, going to the next play and you're like, move on, let's move on. But in between plays, you're like, man, I wonder how he's doing. I wonder if it's as bad as it looked. And then the next play you go and you go play, but you don't have that same focus. So it can take a toll. I'm sure it did for them, especially being away from home and not knowing the extent of the injury at the time. But that's the name of the game, and it's part of it. It's unfortunate.
Dana, earlier Dusty brought up the comparisons between the 2019 Houston Texans and this team here in 2025. That's basically three Texan teams ago, and we're still Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid moving this thing forward. When you look back at that 2019 matchup, Deshaun Watson was their star quarterback, Bill O'Brien was going to be their great head coach, yada, yada, yada. Here we sit, and they've, you know, had basically three total turnovers of the organization since then. I just continue to stress how important it is to enjoy what we have going on here in Kansas City. Are you able to compartmentalize and enjoy what we have going on right now? Or do you still kind of have that player mindset where you're not able to enjoy it till it's done?
You know, what's interesting, about 15 minutes before we connected on this call, I was thinking the same exact thing. I was at Mitch Holter's show at Hy-Vee yesterday,
Bragger.
And you see all the fans and how crazy it is that, you know, they love the Chiefs, they love Mitch, they love that show, and they love supporting us. And there were red coders there and everything. And, you know, as I was moving around the house this morning, I was like, man, you know, maybe this is the time where we soak it up. And I know I got players only later this week, and that's going to be one of my comments is, you know what, we're not conceding. We definitely are still shooting for history, but two things can be true at the same time.
Right.
And we should relish this time because, you know, there's generations of fans that hadn't had this success until recently. And sometimes, you know, you get so caught up in the expectations and the anticipation of potentially making history that you don't sit back and just, like, you know, if you got a cigar, just take a puff. If you got a beverage, just take a sip and, like, wow, like, this is something special that when we were growing up and when we were in our 20s, teens, 20s, heck, even early 30s for me, we never could fathom that we would have this kind of consistent success. So, yeah, I would encourage the fan base that, you know, by no means am I indicating that, you know, some kind of excuse if we lose, but I think you can have multiple things be true. Soak it all up, you know, recognize you got the greatest quarterback alive, you got the greatest tight end alive, you got an incredible team, organization, players that aren't getting in trouble, guys that are doing things right, having families, allowing us into their families, doing amazing things in the community. And, oh, by the way, they're playing incredible football. So, like, yeah, take some time to soak it up, and you can do that. You can sit back and soak it all up, and then right around 2:45 on Saturday afternoon, put your game face on and let's go.
So, getting caught up in the moment, this Chiefs team probably about as healthy as they've been the entire year outside of the Rashee Rice injury. Where do you think this team starts this game off? Is it going to be like the regular season, or do you think there's a new wrinkle in the system? Because a lot of people would say throughout the regular season, why show much? Why show what you have to, like, if don't throw your curveball if you can get away with your fastball. Do you see them maybe, you know, showing this new, like, revamped offense with Hollywood Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, DeAndre Hopkins plays more, Xavier Worthy's more experienced, both your running backs are fully healthy now, maybe not fully healthy, but they've gotten a lot of time off. How do you see this team kind of getting, you know, as we get caught up in the moment, coming out against this Houston defense?
So here's what I think. I think there's a fine line between creativity and getting outside of yourself and getting outside of your identity. You think about the Baltimore Ravens last year. You can't tell me that they went into the preparation against the Chiefs saying we're only going to run the ball six times. That you can't convince me of that. They got outside of themselves. We can be a team that can be creative. You know, we've seen some of the trick plays. We've seen the, you know, the circle of doom and whatever it was called with the huddle. We've seen the different creativity from the offense. I believe that's still going to be a staple because that's part of our identity, whether you like it or not, whether it works or not, it's part of our identity. But at the same time, we played this team back in week 16. there was a game plan in that game that I'm sure they probably didn't get to 10 plays that they prepared for because the down and distance and the circumstances didn't call for it. We'll see. We may see those 8 or 10 plays. We may see some offshoots of some of the things that we had some success with, but we probably can have more success with. I'll give you an example. If you're running shallow crosses and deep crosses across the field, and even though you had success, you caught the ball, got a 6-8 yard gain, maybe moved the chains in the middle of the field, you might recognize something on film that, hey, if we just look like we're going to run that same concept in shallow and deep crosses and then plant and go deep to the corner on a bootleg action or maybe a flea flicker action, that can be a home run play. So it's not so much about recreating things or reinventing the wheel. It's more about, okay, well, based on our success that we had and maybe some of the failures, here are some little tweaks that we can implement. The blitz packages. When C.J. Stroud, there were a couple times he got outside the pocket on the blitz. Maybe we roll the dice a little bit more with corners coming off the blitz as opposed to just linebackers. So that's where the creativity comes in, but I think it's all part of our identity, and that's how we'll be successful.
You mentioned getting outside of yourselves, and we see that happen a lot in sports. I think you experienced it with Marty in the postseason, getting kind of outside of himself. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes don't do that. They've got the belief in themselves, the self-awareness, if you will, to understand, hey, I've been here before. I can believe in myself. A lot of these young coaches, young quarterbacks, first time, second time doing this kind of stuff, maybe don't have that same self-confidence that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes has. What's it like to be on the sidelines when it starts to get outside of yourself? Because I personally don't think you can bring it back once you do.
Yeah, you gotta, man, it's one of those deals where if you are feeling or it looks like you're getting outside of yourself on offense, that's one of those deals where you're hoping that the defense, you'd love for them to get off the field at 3 and out, but maybe it could be more beneficial if there was a 10-play drive and a field goal because it allows you as an offense to kind of get your bearings amongst yourselves and say, hey, you know what, we don't have to throw the ball every down. And that's where you see most of the time, when you're talking about getting outside yourself, it's usually on the offensive side, and it's usually you're trying to throw yourself back in the game, or you may be up by 3 or 4 points and realize, man, we got to get a bigger cushion, and we got to throw the ball a little bit more. Next thing you know, you're going away from Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, which you don't want to do. So, and you get predictable as well. So I feel like there are times in games, and you guys have heard me say this, there are times in games where you're going for the win versus you're trying not to lose. And it happens in every sport and every game, and obviously it's elevated when you're talking about the NFL playoffs because it's not a series. You're either going to win or you're going to go home. And I remember that from the 90s teams. I was like, you know, we ran for over 100 yards against the Colts in 95 in the first half. Why are we throwing the ball all over the lot in the second half? It's because we felt like we got to hurry up and put more points on the board. Not just to win, but because we felt like we could take advantage of that defense. And next thing you know, we're 3 and out, punting the ball, and now we're behind the 8 ball. So, like, for this team, we got to stay within our identity, and there might be a reset during the game, whether it's halftime or in between quarters or what have you, where this team is going to have to recognize, oh, we're doing a little bit too much right now where we can go back to our game plan and be successful.
Well, Dana, don't get outside of yourself in this game on Saturday at 3:30. Have a great call. You and Mitch enjoy that, and hopefully we have this conversation about an AFC Championship game in about a week from today.
Yeah, I'm amped up, man. I got to cool down before game time.
Jump in the snow.
Woosah. Dive in the snow like the Fesco.
That's right. Take care, Dana.
All right, fellas.
Somebody told me the other day, if you stick your face in the snow, it makes a nice imprint of your face in the snow as well.
Yeah, let me know how that works out for
you. I'm not going to do that one now.
Dayton Hughes brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of boo. Boo.
Boo.
Benefit.
Hey, boo. Yeah,
discover the benefit of blue. They can be your boo if you need some health insurance there for you. So coming up on the other side, a battle of the booth, not in Kansas.
A battle of the boo?
A battle of the booth or the boo, however you want to do it. 96 by the Fan, you're over Kansas City Sports.
Fesco and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 965, Kansas City's FM sports station. 96.5 The Fan.
We'll get into a battle of the booth, not the battle of the boo.
I like the Battle of the Boo.
Me too.
Nice. Sydney Sweeney, Sydney Thomas.
Oof. Sweeney.
Sweeney.
She said, it's Sydney Thomas, right? Or yeah. Thomas. Yes. Yeah, Thomas.
I think so, yeah.
She said somebody slid into her
DMs.
Is
she the ring card girl?
Yeah.
Said some SEC coach slid into her DMs.
Yeah. And said Roll Tide, but he's not from Alabama.
Well, that's how you throw him off.
No, that's not how you throw him off. That's just a bad lie. Yeah. I mean, seriously, like if another coach, like if you're at Auburn and your coach is going Roll Tide into somebody's, you got to fire that guy.
Yeah, you're out.
You're out. Like, I mean,
you're not focused.
Yeah.
Somebody had a picture up and it was Lane Kiffin smiling.
Oh, yeah. That's the word.
But well, you know what? Lane isn't married.
Is he not?
I don't think so. I think he's divorced.
Okay.
Because he had the video not long ago with like his daughter out shopping.
Yeah.
And he was just miserable. He's like, how long are we doing this? And all my money is going to all of this. It's like, well, you make a ton of money, Lane.
Yeah. But
he's divorced.
Yeah. He's divorced. So if a divorced, good looking young coach slides into the good looking girls, who the hell cares?
Yeah, come on.
You got to throw a dart.
Who cares?
I've seen his quarterback going up in the rankings for quarterback in the draft. Jackson Dart.
Is he seriously?
I mean, that's
because
how
he's played so many games. Over, like, this is the silly season, guys, where, oh, this guy's making moves based on bench press.
I just saw, of course, we're in that time of the year where, like, you have four people that are following the NFL because there's only, like, four decent teams left. And then you have everybody else who's talking draft.
Yeah.
And I saw the other day, it was like, Jackson Dart has moved up in the draft boards, according to some, see how he could be a talented quarterback in the league. I'm like, that tells you the quarterback class this
rough
year.
It really does. It's a bad, bad, bad quarterback class right now. Mm. And so I don't know where it's going to go and who's going to get drafted. But I'll be honest with you, man, I'm not enamored by any of these guys coming out this year.
So we missed this earlier. I don't want to bring it up because we got a little bit of time here. There's four teams left on each side of the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got your AFC, NFC. Who's better, the Final Four in the AFC or the Final Four in the NFC?
No, I think it's the AFC.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
I don't even think there's any debate, really. I mean, when you start just by ranking the quarterbacks, my God.
So, and that's the second part of it.
Yeah.
It's really not.
And maybe even the head coaches, for that matter, that are left. You got Andy Reid, you got John Harbaugh, you got Sean McDermott, and you've got D'Amico Ryans, right?
Good four.
Like, that's a foursome. I mean, that's a hell of a Mount Rushmore of coaches right there, right? And then you look in the NFC, and you've got Big Dom, you've got Kneebiter, you've got two others. So
Sean McVay,
yeah, and
that's your guy.
I'm trying to think of who's left in the NFC. The Rams
and Dan Quinn.
And Dan Quinn. No, I said the Kneebiter.
That's Dan Campbell.
Oh yeah, Dan Quinn. Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Same guy, just wear their hats different.
Yeah, but see, like that's the thing, and you can ask Josh this for years. I've said, and I'll stand by this. If you're bald and goatee, you're not winning a championship. There's not been one bald goateed coach to win a championship. And so
that's great.
If you have a coach that's bald, like Spector will come in here today and roll his eyes at this, right? Because I know it probably drives him up a wall, much like Hershey's isn't a chocolate and all this.
Is it because he's bald?
But he doesn't have a goatee.
Oh.
So like the bald. Bald goatee look, that guy does not win a championship, like in any major sport. And like we went through them all. Like, no, you're right. Nobody in the NBA has ever like been bald and goateed. There may have been a hockey guy that was an outlier at one point in time. So if your team hires a bald guy with a goatee, you're effed.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Max like looking like how many bald guys with goatees have won? Not one in the NFL.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah, even what's that psycho that coaches UConn? He's Hurley, no goatee.
Dan Hurley, no goatee.
No goatee. You bald. Can be bald. That's you can true. Have a goatee, but if you're bald and have a goatee,
you're done.
You're not winning.
Wow,
man.
Sorry, Dan Quinn.
Like Dan Quinn's, as much as he's done and how good he's been, he's not winning a championship. And the Washington Commanders are your Super Bowl champs.
Completely debunks
it. Just to say that, but no, I mean it's been a trend forever. Balding, goateed coaches don't win.
So, Battle of the Booth. Has Tony Romo gone completely stale?
I'm over him.
I think there's times where you're like, oh, it wasn't too bad. Romo's call against Buffalo was atrocious. And it started off with Bo Nix has been on fire the last seven quarters. I'm like, Tony, you have, and this isn't me being biased. Four of those seven quarters, Bo Nix played against a B/C squad Chiefs team. And then he continued to say things in the game where I'm like, I'm not an expert, but I know what he's saying doesn't hold up. And I was just kind of to the point where I'm like, I'm more now talking about Tony Romo than I am watching this game. And I was over it.
Tony Romo was great in that first year as a broadcaster because he was different. He was unique.
He was calling plays before they happened. Right.
And he's done nothing to evolve.
Right. It's like he got really good and then he just was like, this is fine.
It's like Patrick Mahomes coming out of the gate 50 and 5,000. That's the expectation now every year, right? You're never going to live up to that. But Tony hasn't gotten better, hasn't evolved, hasn't changed. The game is moving further and further from him, as it is from everybody who retires. He's not done anything different or new, you know?
Is he better than Brady?
Well,
Tom Brady's growing on me. And I know you guys have your different opinion, but like, it was tough in the first couple weeks of the season where I'm like, okay, Tom, you got to get out of your skin. You got to loosen up, man. Like, again, I don't do play-by-play. I don't do color commentary. I've done it. And I know that the color commentator is supposed to be the guy that's like knows the game, doesn't know, like, you know, isn't, you know, it's like Dana and Mitch, right?
Yeah,
like
Dana played. Why? Dana knows, why it happened.
Exactly. And I thought Tom Brady was better. I thought he's gotten better. I thought he was okay in the last game that he did in the playoffs. I thought he was fine. Definitely better than Romo. But if you do the battle of the booth, man, like I think that I like Brady more than I like Tony Romo.
And I don't have an answer to your question right now because I look at Tony Romo as getting worse, but I think he's better this year than he was a year ago.
But you also think Brady should just focus on one job over the other.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you're either going to own a team and hire a coach or you're going to be in the broadcast booth. I don't think you could do both effectively. And that's fine. You're with the Raiders now. They haven't done anything effectively since Ott 2, which is more recent than Jerry Jones has done anything effectively. But I don't know. I think the biggest issue that I have with a lot of former athletes that enter the booth, especially that played for New England, is that they're so ingrained of saying nothing. And it's hard to get out of a 20-year mold of, like, you've done something for 20 years. When a microphone comes into your face, you dummy up. I think it's hard to get over that. I think Brady has experienced that. I do think he's gotten better. I'm not going to lie.
Isn't a high ladder to climb. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was very low. Right?
It was low, but like I can watch a game and it's fine. It's nothing, you know, like where I'm going to go, oh my God, Tom Brady said this or Tom Brady said that. Like, it's not going to wow me. But I don't think Tom is getting in the way of the game anymore like he was at the beginning of the season. At the beginning of the year, I'm like, uh-oh. Now he's gotten better. And hey, look, he's a world-class athlete. These guys want to get better and show improvement and be the best of what they do. So I think Tom has gotten better.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it wouldn't be who I like more, it'd be who I dislike less, and I think it'd be Brady.
Yeah.
Because I get mad at
that's
Romo.
That's not a good way to put it for those guys, but it's a good way to put it for this conversation. Yeah.
Who would be your dream booth?
That's Summerall and Madden. I've already had my dream booth. That's it for me. Yeah.
Jealous. Didn't really get to live that one up.
Beginning to rain, John.
I would do Brent Musburger and Greg Olson.
You are looking live. I would do Marshawn Lynch and Kevin Harlan.
Oh, wow, that'd be fun.
Because Marshawn Lynch, you have no idea, and Kevin Harlan, I think, would bounce off of him very well.
Kevin would be great with him because Kevin's great with everybody because Kevin is just a stud superstar.
Incredible.
Yeah. Even better human being. I say it all the time. I love Kevin Harlan, like just a great human. Even better broadcaster, even better human, however you want to put it, just tremendous individual. He would be good with Marshawn Lynch.
It
would be fantastic.
Because Marshawn Lynch would say something that maybe Kevin Harlan wouldn't understand, but he would try to understand it, and then Marshawn Lynch would just continue to roll. And then Kevin Harlan, I guarantee you, with his memory and his wittiness, he would bring something up that Marshawn Lynch said, and Marshawn would be like, damn, man, okay, you got it. That's right.
Imagine Kevin Harlan and Marshawn Lynch calling the guy on the field, the guy is drunk, and like Marshawn Lynch being part of that.
Yeah,
and Marshawn Lynch could talk about driving that cart over the guy at Cal and things like that.
Make it happen.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a fun booth.
Or pair Marshawn Lynch with Mitch Holtis.
Marshawn Lynch and Mitch.
Mitch would be like, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Because like the way that Mitch reacts, like Dana does such a good job of just being like, I'm used to it. Mitch reacting to like a touchdown late in the game where he's like fist pumping and dancing. Marshawn Lynch would be like, dude, you need to chill. I don't know.
I think it could be cool, yeah.
913-586-7965. Who would be your dream booth? Coming up on the other side, Deion Sanders. Yes, and Dallas. Maybe we saw it coming. And speaking of that, on the come as well. And 96.5 The Fan, you're listening to Fesco and Dusty, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty.
I just want to say how awesome it is to have Bob Fesco and Legend Likens on every morning to start my day. I freaking love you guys.
On your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5, the Fed.